I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. After breaking the $3 billion mark in annual revenue, Baltimore-based Under Armour is spending hundreds of millions on fitness technology in the quest to sell more shoes and shirts around the world. The Baltimore Business Journal's Sarah Meehan and market analyst Sam Poser of Stern AG join me for an Under Armour catch-up hour after the NPR News at 1. Up front, is Baltimore ever going to see a ban on plastic shopping bags? City Councilman Jim Kraft joins me to talk about the renewed effort to ban the bag and an initiative in council to change a city charter to reduce the mayor's veto power. Live talk on Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Midday Show. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. How much power should the mayor of Baltimore have? How many votes should the 15-member Baltimore City Council need to override the mayor's veto? How many terms should a mayor or other city officials, the city comptroller, members of the city council, be allowed to serve? These are the questions before some of the questions before the city council. We're going to talk about them in this hour of the show. Three bills relating to those issues I just mentioned come up at a time that where there's been some tension between the council and Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. Late last year, Mayor Rawlings-Blake vetoed two bills that passed the council with overwhelming support. One of those bills was a ban on plastic bags that we discussed here on the Midday Show. The other bill would have outfitted Baltimore police officers with body cameras, and we discussed that on the show as well. My guest this hour is Baltimore City Councilman Jim Kraft. Jim Kraft is a proponent of putting certain limits on the mayor's power and argues that the relationship between the mayor and city council should be more of a partnership. Right now, it takes 12 votes to override a mayoral veto in Baltimore. Jim Kraft, nice to have you on the show.
Nice to be here, Dan.
Yes, there's 15 members of the city council. I want to go over this with you first. There's a few things we're going to talk about, term limits and also the composition of the Baltimore City Board of Estimates. We'll get to that in a minute. But so last fall, you had this bill, the plastic bags ban.
Right.
And you're the city councilman. We got all kinds of emails, phone calls at The Sun and here at my show. It's overwhelmingly supporting the idea of banning plastic bags with a few gripes here and there with a few misgivings about it. But the plastic bag ban in city council passed 11-1. And then the body camera bill passed 13-1. And the mayor didn't like either of these measures for various reasons that we'll discuss. But the city council could not override the veto because despite those overwhelming votes, you couldn't get enough votes to override a veto.
That's correct.
So someone would say, well, wait a minute. If you had 11 votes for the plastic bags ban, you only needed one more to override the veto. And if you had 13 to outfit the police officers with body cameras, then you should have been able to override a mayoral veto with at least 12 votes, or 13 votes. So what happened?
Well, when you talk about the specific issue, you have folks that will support the specific issue, both the plastic bag bill and the body cameras. When you talk about the challenge to the mayor's power, not being particular to this mayor, but a mayor,
mm-hmm.
There are certain people who will always vote with a mayor, so that when you get to that point, no matter what the particular issue is, if the challenge comes down to a vote between the issue and a decision for a mayor, there are certain people that are going to vote for a mayor. So
you don't think that's unique to Baltimore, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. So there are some who will say, yeah, I'll vote on principle for a specific issue, but if the mayor doesn't like it, I'm not going to go against the mayor.
If a mayor doesn't like it, I'm not going to vote against the mayor.
Well, see, I'm sorry. I got to just say, that part has never made sense to me, because if you felt strongly enough on Monday to vote for a plastic bag ban in Baltimore or body cameras for the police officers, you think they ought to all the street officers ought to have them. And the mayor is going to veto the bill. I think you should stand. I think you should be consistent.
Well, it's one of the disadvantages of a strong mayor system, because at the end of the day, a mayor has, in a city like Baltimore, all of the power. So that while we can challenge the decisions of a mayor and we can try to move forward with something that we feel very strongly about, if at the end of the day a mayor doesn't want to do it, then mayor says no, and whether a mayor says, I'm not going to do it, or a mayor vetoes the bill, you have council members who are saying,
I'm with the bill. I'm with the mayor no matter what.
Correct.
Right. When I was first covering city council, I remember City Councilman Willie Myers from South Baltimore. Remember him from the 6th
yes.
District?
Mm-hmm.
He used to stand up all the time and say, I'm with the mayor 100%, 110%. I'm with the mayor. And he never voted against the mayor on anything. I don't know if it ever came to a veto. Those are back in the days of William Donald Schaefer. So what's been proposed in the way of changing this?
Well, what we've proposed in terms of the veto is to go to a two-thirds veto rather than a three-quarters veto. We've looked at the U.S. government. We've looked at the 50 states, and we've looked at the 25 largest cities in the nation, of which we are one. In the 50 states, all 50 states have two-thirds or less in order to override a veto. The U.S. government is less than that.
What did you find in those 25 largest cities?
When we looked in the 25 largest cities, there are two that are the same as the city of Baltimore, El Paso, Texas, and Nashville, Tennessee.
Calling for three-quarters of the council.
Calling for three-quarters. And then every other city is two-thirds or less. Some cities, you cannot override the veto. Some cities.
Oh, really? Some cities say
yeah,
you.
Some, I
if
mean,
the mayor
I'm
vetoes
sorry,
your bill, you
I'm
know.
Sorry. Some cities, there. You need just a majority to override.
Oh, just
the
a majority,
veto.
Okay.
Right? And some right. cities, the mayor can't veto because the mayor is a member of the council.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's strange, isn't it?
Right. And yeah. In some cities, you need a majority plus one. So, in the city of Baltimore, that would require only nine. But we're not asking for that.
You're asking for two-thirds.
We're asking for two-thirds, which would put us in line with 99% of the legislative bodies in the country.
First question to our listeners then, in Baltimore City, I don't care where you are, if you want to weigh in today, what do you think about this? 410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. Dan Rodgers here with 1st District City Councilman Jim Kraft. So if we have a city charter amendment— And it actually got on the ballot, right? You'd have to vote for this.
Yes.
Changing the city charter from a three-quarters requirement for a veto override in the city council to two-thirds. How would you vote? That's our first question for listeners in this
hour. Correct.
All right. 410-662-8780. You can also send comments for me to read on the air for Jim Kraft to midday at wypr.org. Next item, Jim. Before we move on, plastic bags, you have filed this bill again. There is a renewed effort to ban plastic bags.
Well, actually, the bill has been filed by Councilman Henry this time. I've heard the bill eight times over the last 9 years, and basically I have said the bill's assigned to my committee again, and I have said that I will not hear the bill until we have a pledge from the mayor to sign it. We're not going through this again. We have the same people show up every time we have the hearing. We hear the same arguments. We've been doing it over and over again, and I'm not putting everything through it. If the mayor's going to sign it, she's going to sign it. If she's not going to sign it, she's not going to sign it. But until we have a commitment from her to sign the bill, we're not hearing it.
Is it any different than the bill that passed council back in November?
No, it is a ban. It is the bill that we passed, and one of her objections was that it didn't go through the hearing process that she wanted it to go through. So we will give it that hearing process if she's going to sign it.
Okay. Now, if the mayor still doesn't like it, doesn't think there should be a plastic bag ban in Baltimore, then you're facing the prospect of a city charter amendment to change the veto structure in the city. so that if the council down the road were to pass the ban again, they may have enough votes to override a veto.
That would be correct.
Right. Okay. Right. All right. Next item, Jim Kraft, you just came from a hearing down at City Hall on this item. This is another bill filed by, is it this one also filed by Councilman Bill Henry?
Yes.
Okay. This has to do with term limits for certain city officials, including the mayor. I believe also the comptroller is mentioned, and members of the city council. Can you break this down for us?
Sure. What this bill would do would limit the number of terms that the mayor and the city council could serve after 2016. So what it would say is that the mayor could serve two terms and the president could serve two terms.
President of the city council.
Right. And the comptroller could serve two terms and the council members could serve three terms. And this is similar to another number of the sister jurisdictions around us.
Can you make a comeback? In other words, if you serve, if a mayor serves two terms, takes a break, you know, goes to jail, something like that, and then can he or she make a comeback and serve two more terms?
No.
That's it for life.
This would be serve two terms.
Oh. Right. Oh, what do you think about that one? Listen, this is the next question for our listeners here. Listen, we got plenty of questions for you. We welcome your opinions here. 410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. Dan Rodericks with City Councilman Jim Kraft. Do you think the mayor of Baltimore's terms ought to be limited to two, the city council president to two, comptroller also the same, Jim, two terms?
Yes. I mean, this is the present rule in Anne Arundel County, in Baltimore County, in Frederick County, in Harford County, in Howard County, and in Prince George's County. The only one of the major counties that does not have a two-term limit on their executives is Montgomery County. So all the other major jurisdictions in the state have a two-year term on the executive.
What's the idea there? I mean, be a little philosophical for me, would you? What do you think is the benefit of having term limits? People call in all the time and say, congressmen should be term limited, senators should be term limited. What do you think is the benefit of this?
You know, I have mixed feelings about this one. I'm not, haven't come down one way or the other. I think that, we have this for the president, we have it for the governor, we have these all around the country. Sometimes you get a leader that has such a vision that you want them to have more than two terms because what they want to do is going to take 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah.
And we've seen that. Joe Riley down in Charleston, who's been the mayor down there for 30 years. If you go to Charleston, you see the city that's there. Joe Riley built that city. He's a unique individual. But on the other hand, you look at people that get in the office and they hold the office, and then as soon as they begin the second term, they're running for some other office. Or they get the office and they don't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to weigh those factors and see, which is stronger. And I'm not quite sure which one.
What about in city council? Now, you've been in city council for 12 years, am I right?
Right. Right.
Since 2003, representing Fells Point and other neighborhoods in southeast Baltimore, right?
Right.
So what do you think where are you on that, limiting city council members to three, 4-year terms?
Well, again, it's a similar thing. The one thing that you lose when you limit terms is institutional knowledge, and you can't buy that. And I think that's the most important loss. And having seen that in government, when many of the departments, you go through these periodic brain drains when, you have a group of people that have been with the city 30, 35 years, and they all retire at the same time.
Yeah.
And then you have this gap where, people don't know where to find things. It's the same thing when you have a forced changeover in legislators. You go back and just keep making the same mistakes that you've made.
Because no one there is to remind you, we tried this once before and this is why it failed or something.
I mean, there aren't many new ideas. You know, it's just how you repackage them.
Banning plastic bags, limiting the mayor to 2 terms in office, city council president to 2 terms in office. What do you think of these ideas? You can weigh in during this hour of midday, 410-662-8780. Jim Kraft is with us, Baltimore city councilman, who's been pushing for a plastic bags ban in Baltimore for years now. But now he's saying, I'm not going to push this thing any further unless we get some commitment from the mayor that she supports this. Where are you on it? You can give us a ring. Also, the veto power of the mayor. Should we see a city charter amendment in Baltimore dropping the veto override from 3/4 of the votes in the 15-member city council to just 2/3? We welcome your comments. 410-662-8780. Do you think there is a value to term limits in city government? 410-662-8780. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks with Baltimore City Councilman Jim Kraft talking about city government and, in particular, the powers of the mayor. Jim, you saw the story last month, Luke Broadwater's story in The Sun about this issue, where Kevin Harris, who's a spokesman for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, said this is a solution in search of a problem. In her 5 years as mayor, Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has signed into law 667 pieces of legislation and vetoed just 3 bills. So what's your response to that? You look at those numbers and say, okay, what is the problem here?
Well, you know, when you say 667 pieces of legislation, when you look at that, I mean, you're looking at every zoning bill. You're looking at every resolution. You're looking at every, street closings. I mean, while every piece of legislation is important, they're not all
right.
Substantive pieces of legislation right. That when people think about that. It's like, you know, the Republicans say that they, in Congress, that they passed all this legislation, but they name post offices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what's substantial and what isn't.
Well, plastic bags is one thing, but you may have something, an issue of another nature, much more important, of a major nature in Baltimore, where you're looking at a close vote in city council or an overwhelming vote in city council, and the mayor is personally opposed to whatever the issue is. And you have to get 12 out of the 15 council people to vote against the mayor.
Correct.
You want to drop it to... What's 2/3 of 15?
Ten.
So, right. Okay, that's the proposal there. I want one last thing on this before we start taking some calls. This issue of the mayor's veto power goes back to the summer, and I just wanted to mention this because we had a big announcement recently about from the mayor's office relieving local businesses in particular of some of these minor privilege fees that are charged in Baltimore, things such as being charged for an awning, being charged for having a bike rack in front of your business, right?
Right.
Well, back in the summer, am I correct? Then the city council had the same bill in place to do away with some of these fees, right?
Right. This goes back to an issue that I have been discussing with Mr. Gallagher when he was the director of the budget, and that was trying to resolve these issues with people who pay one type of fee in the business districts and also have to pay these minor privilege fees. And so I hadn't introduced the legislation because we were trying to work it out with this task force that the mayor had. The task force wasn't moving very quickly, so I introduced the legislation saying, look, let's send this to the voters and ask the voters if they will give the council the power to set these fees. Not let the council do it, but give the council the power to set the fees. The mayor said, No, we're going to do this, and she vetoed the bill.
The bill passed.
The bill passed.
Because you could have set the fees at zero, right? Is that right. The power that you wanted?
Well, we could have set them at anything, and we could have decided where there would be a fee or not. But we couldn't do it without the voters having made the decision first.
To say that the council should have that power.
Exactly.
And the mayor vetoed this.
The mayor wouldn't even let it go to the voters to determine whether we could get the power. So then the mayor vetoed it, and we were told that we would have a report in August. Then we were told we would have a report in October, and then we got an announcement in January.
That
that some of the
fees would be dropped.
Being dropped or modified.
Yeah. One last thing. Another piece of legislation I just want to talk about brief here. The Baltimore City Board of Estimates, which meets every Wednesday, is composed of the mayor, the city comptroller, the city council president, the director of the Department of Public Works, and the city solicitor. There are five members there. There's legislation in the city council relative to this. What does it present?
Well, it's another charter amendment. And what it would do is it would reduce the size to 3, and it would do away with the Department of Public Works director
and the solicitor. So you're doing away with 2 mayoral appointments,
well,
right?
The thing is, the mayor has 3 votes. A mayor has 3 votes. So the whole thing is a dance. You go in every week. They go through the process. A mayor has 3 votes. So it doesn't matter what the issue is. Mayor comes in, mayor sets the budget, the mayor makes the financial decisions. They vote, but in any vote, it starts out, so it's going to be 3-2 or 4-1 or 5-0. But at the end of the day, it's always 3-2. So, you know, we either change it. If we wanted to make a difference, we bring it down to 3, where you have 3 people who can effectively vote,
mm-hmm.
All of whom
were elected at large.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Or we just do away with the Board of Estimates and let the mayor make the decision, because a mayor's making the decision anyhow. And then we set up procurement separately,
mm-hmm.
and let the, you know, the other issue regarding the budget and the ordinance of estimates go forward through the mayor, because in real life, that's what happens.
In the state of Maryland, the Board of Public Works is composed of the governor, the state comptroller, and the state treasurer.
Correct.
Right? Now, how the state treasurer gets into office, how?
Through the legislature.
Through the legislature, not the governor?
No.
Okay. The legislature selects a treasurer.
Treasurer, right.
Okay. Jim Kraft is our guest, 410-662-8780. A lot to chew on here. The veto power of the mayor in Baltimore, the term limits for the mayor, city comptroller, members of the city council. What do you think of these ideas? The plastic bag ban. I think I know how my listeners feel about this. Most people supported that the last time we talked about it. Dave in Patterson Park, welcome to the Midday Show. Go right ahead, Dave.
Hi there. Good afternoon. This is Dave Adwarka. Hi there, Jim.
Hi, how are you, Dave?
Not bad. All right. First of all, on the plastic bags, I fully support this. There are some stores that will not give you plastic bags, so you either take your own or you purchase one. Personally, when I go to the store, I take my own bags. So we have to think of the environment. So this is something that should be done. It's long overdue. Number two, absolute power corrupts absolutely. I'm not sure if that's the saying these words in a proper order, but you get the essence.
Well, are you talking about the veto power of the mayor?
Yes.
What do you think about that? Should they change this formula?
If the United States Congress only needs two-thirds of its members to override a veto, or why not the city?
Okay, Dave, thank you very much. Let's take another call. This is on the subject of term limits. We'll go to Frederick and take John's call. Thanks for calling in, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
So I think we should actually go a little farther with this whole idea of term limits, the idea that you could just have one term, a longer term, and not have to be worried about having to get reelected and spending the extra money and time. You'd be able to focus on your job and know that you have that one X amount of time, whatever that might be, 8, 10 years, something like that.
Hmm.
I think in general, in world, you know, nationwide, this would be a great help, especially when you start looking at the larger picture of the president. And you can imagine how focused our presidents could be if they had 1 8-year term and they focused on that. But I think this should be considered everywhere.
I don't know about 8 years. I feel a little stuck with 8 years. But maybe, I don't know about the president, but 6 years for a mayor?
It's an
interesting idea. You know, you're in office. You get this one shot. You don't have to spend after you're in office 2.5 years. You don't have to start raising money for your reelection campaign. Just focus on the job for 6 years. I'm still trying to get a good argument on the value of a term limit in local government or at any level, really. I welcome this conversation. Here's an opposing view here from Klaus, who says term limits are overrated. If voters are tired of someone, they will vote them out of office. A strong mayor is the best we have to combat Baltimore's challenges. Weaken the mayor, and we will never get beyond quibbling with the city council. The solution is not a weaker mayor, but a stronger council where all members are at large and responsible to all. So that sounds like a vote to do away with councilmanic districts. I don't know about that.
The voters have spoken on that, and really...
Actually, we changed the charter some years ago, didn't we?
Right, we changed the charter just, you know, within the last 10 years to go to single-member districts. It's a lot more work for the council person, very frankly, to be in a single-member district. It makes it easier when it's at large. But the other side of that is when people have to run at large, the question is why, if you're going to run at large and you have to raise the money to run citywide, why run for the council? May as well run for the whole thing.
Right. And as for voting people out of office and this question of the mayor's power, you know, I said to people in the last fall when this was in the city council, when the plastic bags ban was in city council, I said there are councilmen who voted for the ban who will not vote to override. The city council president, Jack Young said he didn't have the votes to override the veto same night that the bill passed.
Correct.
So I said to people, find out who those council members are who voted for the plastic bags ban but won't vote against the mayor, and then deal with them. They might be representing you. 410-662-8780 is our number here. Dwight in Greenmount West. Welcome to the show, Dwight.
Hi, good afternoon, Dan and your guests. On the plastic bag issue, I really don't think that we should be talking about plastic bags, because it's not the bags themselves that is the problem. It's the way people manage plastic bags and other things. I think that we should devote more time to educating people on handling waste appropriately, and then we won't have this problem. And I had a question. If any of these legislative issues that the councilman talked about passed at the city level as far as charter changes, wouldn't they have to be affirmed through the General Assembly in Annapolis? And thank you so much for your programming.
Okay.
So I'll take the second one first. They don't have to be affirmed in Annapolis. They do have to be affirmed by the voters. So they would go on the ballot, and the ballot would have to decide that. And actually, the plastic bags themselves are a problem. You know, we've had Keep America Beautiful for decades. It hasn't worked. But the plastic bags themselves have caused many problems. All you have to do is go down and look in the harbor, look in the stormwater drains, look in our trees, and you'll see
them. This time of year, this is high season for plastic bags because they're more visible. The leaves are on the trees.
High season.
It is. They're all over the place against chain link fences. But, you know, Dwight is correct about people's behavior. I think we ought to have stronger anti-litter campaigns. We kind of dropped that.
Schaefer had the trash ball. That was a great one.
Yeah, but at least you got to raise the consciousness about it. You know, signs, public service announcements on this station and others. I don't know what happened to that. We grew up with it in the 60s and 70s.
Kids are great. Kids are really working well on the recycling aspect of it. And when you get the kids involved, then they embarrass the parents.
Let's take another call. Francis in Baltimore on this subject of plastic bags. Go right ahead, Francis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I fear that I missed something. I think your last couple of comments may have enlightened me a bit, because I was curious as to what the problem was with the plastic bags. Yes, I do see it flying in the air and everything. But what kind of disturbs me, Baltimore has a trash problem, period. People just throw trash anywhere. And I'm wondering, without plastic bags, how are people going to contain the trash? I mean, good citizens that actually, you know, put the trash in the bags and then put it out for the trash people in the proper way and whatever. Without something to contain the trash, won't people just throw stuff all over the street more than they already do?
Well, it doesn't apply to those bags. It's certain types of bags that you get handed at the grocery store. So your regular trash bag that you put plastic bag, that would not be banned. It's the bags that you've got at the grocery store. So what we'd be asking folks to do is get reusable bags. We'd be asking the grocers to provide reusable bags. And more and more people are using them right now. You'll see them where they've... In fact, if people always say, remember the good old days, well, you know, one of the good old days things where people always brought their bags into the grocery stores. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about doing away with your liner bag that you put into your kitchen trash can or the plastic bag that you put into your bag out in the yard. Your can in the yard.
You know, in the fall when you guys in the city council were talking about this, and I thought about it, and we discussed it here in the air a couple of times. Got lots of emails from people with different perspectives on this. And I thought, well, it's one less thing in the trash stream. You can't go out and change people's behavior overnight. That's hard to do. But you can eliminate one particular piece of trash, something that ends up as trash, from the trash stream.
Exactly. Huh? I mean, that's...
Change behavior. Don't
right.
use it. Don't get it at the supermarket. Bring your own bag.
When you look at plastic bags, you look at polystyrene, styrofoam, and you look at plastic bottles and cans, aluminum cans. If we could take them out of the waste stream, in terms of bulk, we'd be taking about 85% of the trash that we find in the harbor, out of the harbor. We've had a styrofoam bill for 8 years. Montgomery County just passed theirs. New York City just implemented theirs. That's the next thing we need.
That's
to
another
there.
Bill that you sponsored. You said 8 years ago, first time. So what's the status of that?
Well, we have it in committee. We're holding it. Again, we at one point had a commitment for passage on that. We don't have one right now.
A commitment meaning enough votes in the council or the mayor's support?
We had enough votes on the council, and at one point, I believe we had the mayor's support.
Let's take another call before our next break. Jim Kraft is our guest, the city councilman for the 1st District of Baltimore. Kevin, welcome to the show. Go right ahead. Hi.
Hello. I've been listening to the show, and the thought came to my mind is, out of 600 and something votes, the mayor only vetoed 3 times. Why try to take the mayor's power away? That just doesn't make sense in numbers. You know, it just doesn't make sense.
Right,
it sounds like to me that that's council people like an upset child because they didn't get their way. So now they're doing whatever they can to get back at mom.
Okay, we got to go over this again, Jim, before we take our break here, because I addressed this thing about 667 pieces of legislation versus 3 that were vetoed.
Well, again, it's not about that. We've had this series of government reform bills pending for some time, and we decided to take a look at all of them. This one is really the most obvious one when you look at it comparatively across the nation. That is, no one else is doing this. As I said, we have about 90-95% of the legislative bodies across the country only require a 2/3 majority to override a veto. That's all we're doing is saying, let's put us on the same plane as everybody else. We're discussing all these reform bills, whether they all pass or not, and whether there's support for all of them or not, we don't know. But this is one that is clearly in the mainstream.
I got to ask this question before the break. So if the city council were to pass this bill saying the bill would be calling for a charter amendment, for the voters to decide whether the city council should only need 10 votes to override a mayoral veto. Can the mayor override?
The mayor will
veto.
The mayor has already said she will veto it. So
how is... So, how is this ever going to change then?
Well, the thing is, at that point, the voters could decide because the voters can put it on the ballot with 10,000 signatures.
So you need a petition drive.
You need a petition drive.
A short break here. We'll come back and talk some more with Jim Kraft. Please let us know what you think about this particular bill changing the veto power or the veto override power of the city council from a required now three-quarters vote to two-thirds. 410-662-8780. Jim Kraft is here. We can also talk about the plastic bags ban. Also, whether police should have body cameras in Baltimore, what the status of that is, whether there should be term limits for the mayor and members of the city council. 410-662-8780. This is Midday. Welcome back. It's Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Baltimore City Councilman Jim Kraft. We're talking about some bills that are in city council currently, one to place term limits on the mayor, the president of the city council, the city comptroller, and to hold to three terms members of the city council. In the latter cases, it would be two terms. Also, a bill calling for a city charter amendment, changing the city charter when it comes to the necessary votes to override a mayoral veto in the Baltimore City Council. Right now, it's three-quarters of the 15-member city council required to override a veto. This bill would change it to two-thirds. We have that. And also changing the makeup of the Baltimore Board of Estimates from the current five with the mayor and two of her appointments, meaning the mayor has three votes out of five-member Board of Estimates, to just three members, all elected at large, the comptroller, city council president, and the mayor. 410-662-8780 is our number here. Also, you know, Jim Kraft represents the 1st District of Baltimore, Southeast Baltimore. If you have any questions for him about the district, go ahead and give us a ring on that, too. Megan has a question I was going to ask you about. Megan calling from Patterson Park. Go right ahead with your question for Jim Kraft, please.
Hi, how you doing, Jim? I had a couple comments, and then I had a question for you. First of all, I definitely support the plastic bag ban. I think it's a simple way to clean up our harbor. I think it's a great piece of legislation. And I also support changing the veto ratio, because I think having a strong city council is crucial to our community's health. You know, here in Baltimore, our communities come first. And I've actually met you before on, you know, I live in District 1, and you're a council member, and I met you when you came out on a cop walk that we did. And I was really impressed by your involvement in our district run and all the great things that you've been doing. So I was really surprised to hear that when I read that you are not planning on running for city council again. And I was wondering if your views on term limits kind of are contributing to that decision. And then I guess my follow-up question is, when you're thinking about term limits, is that, you know, there's a problem with, like, you know, continuing the good work that one council member's done to, like, another council member. And, you know, I wonder how, you know, when you're thinking about District 1, like, how the good work that you've done can be continued. You know, I've been reading online, there's a guy named Zeke Cohen. I don't know if you know him, but he's been putting these things up online. He's really been building our community, and he's got a great nonprofit. And I heard that he's considering a run for District 1, and I'm just wondering, from your perspective, what you see as the future for District 1 and how the good work that you've done in strengthening and building our community can be continued.
Okay, first things first. You decided not to run for re-election. Thank you for that question, Megan, because I was going to ask you about that before the hour was up. What made you decide to do that, Jim?
Well, there's some other things that I want to do. I've been the councilman for 12 years. When I ran for the council the first time, it was right after they created single-member districts. So there was no incumbent. When we all ran, we could run with what our vision was for the district. We weren't running against anybody. We were running for something. When I decided that I wasn't going to run, I decided that I would announce it early enough so that those people who wanted to run could get out and talk about what they wanted to do for Southeast Baltimore, and not, I don't like Kraft, why I would be different than he is, but really just put forward their ideas about where they see the district going, because it is the most vibrant district in the city. It's where the majority of development is going on, and it really is such a diverse district. You have to approach it from so many different ways. I wanted to make certain that that there really would be a full debate. And also there were a number of people who had come to me and said, you know, are you going to run? Because if you're not, I'd like to run. And I didn't think it was fair to them when I knew that I wasn't going to do it to sit back and let them wait.
Well, when did you decide? And what went into that? And were you influenced by your views on term limits? I should say, you're up in the air on term limits. You're not certain that term limits is a good
idea.
Okay,
Term limits never came into play.
Okay. What made you decide then?
I've been thinking about it really for the last year. The job is a tough job. I mean, people think this is an easy job. It is not an easy job. It's very demanding. It's a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week job, and particularly in a district like mine where you have good, strong community organizations, where you have a very educated and somewhat affluent electorate who is constantly, you know, contacting you and know what's going on. You know, I have a great staff. I have more staff than most of my colleagues. Shriver Fellows, you know, interns, paid and unpaid. And
just to keep up with constituent service.
Exactly.
Right?
To keep up with the constituent service. And I also do a lot of legislative work. And it's extremely demanding. And as I said, I've reached that point, you know, where I think it's time for me to do something else.
And what's the something else? Have you figured that out yet? Because you are a practicing attorney, correct?
I am. And I haven't made that decision yet, but I will make it soon, and I will announce that.
Okay, so no announcement on midday today?
Not today.
All right. Let's take another call for Jim Kraft. Don from the Eastern Shore giving us a ring here. Hi, Don.
Hey. Not only the plastic bags, but I think that soda bottles, beer cans, you know, things like that, they should all have a deposit on them. And if you look at a soda bottle, there's like probably 10 different states that, you know, require a deposit on that bottle. And by, you know, putting a deposit on them and plastic bags also, you know, maybe an X number of bags for a nickel or a dime or whatever, you could have kids out here, you know, picking up the soda bottles and beer cans and plastic bags and taking them in for, you know, charities, for their school projects, whatever. The homeless, you know, they'd be going around picking up all these.
All right, we're on the same page. Jim just said, Don, and I'm on the same page with you, too. I actually looked into this a couple of years ago when we had the bottle tax in Baltimore. Several people called and said, why don't we have a deposit on the bottle? I grew up with that. That's how we raise money for Little League uniforms.
I actually had that discussion with the mayor when we were talking about the bottle tax, talking about having a deposit, and for those people who didn't use the deposit, to have the tax on them so that you could do the mandatory deposit or you could pay the tax in the alternative.
I've seen this done in Massachusetts. It's very easy. You go to the supermarket, you do your shopping, you bring your bottles with you, you stick them in a machine, and coins come out, or dollar bills come out, whatever the value is.
It's a reverse vending machine, right?
Yeah. Let's take another call, Dave. I'm sorry, no. Let's go to Will first. Will called before Dave, and then Alita, and then Dave. So that's the order of calls. Okay, Will, go right ahead.
Yes. Good afternoon. I had a question and I had a comment. The first had to do with the police body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the mayor say on several occasions that she supported police body cameras, but then she said she would veto the bill that would create that coming out of city council. What I didn't understand about that, because her reason was that the bill was flawed in terms of its legality, but I didn't understand how a bill could leave city council without a review by the city law department for legal sufficiency, one. And two, if the mayor says that the bill that city council would present to her or that would pass is flawed, why didn't she submit a bill into the city council that met the standards that she said she could support or sign off on.
Okay, let's hear from Jim on that.
Okay, first of all, there was a report from the law department that said the bill was flawed. We disagreed with it, and we had lawyers that disagreed with it. So it was their lawyers versus our lawyers, and we agreed with our lawyers on that bill. We did not get an alternative bill from the administration. We were told that we would get an alternative in the future. The mayor said that the way the bill was passed, that we would have had to put body cameras on every single officer everywhere. I think that was open to interpretation and discussion and negotiation, but you know, that's beside the point. The bill has been vetoed. We were told that there would be a report due coming to us in January. We have not seen it. It's mid-February now.
A report on whether the city should move ahead
on,
with the cameras.
Body camera issue. Yeah. And we have not seen it yet. It's mid-February, but you know, we've gone through this with the minor privilege issue before.
Yeah. The mayor will be on the show tomorrow, actually, 24 hours from now. She'll be in on midday during the noon hour tomorrow, and we'll give her a chance to respond to some of these issues at that time and take some more calls. Okay, now to Alita. Alita, thanks for calling. You're on with Jim Kraft.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just had a couple comments when it comes to the term limits. First, when we look at Montgomery County, the richest county, and also Baltimore City being the exception, the first thing that comes to my mind is Harbor Place. I was with a couple who were from Jersey on Sunday. They had not heard of it. They just heard a little bit about it. They hadn't been there. I walked them around, you know, sort of like a impromptu tour guide for them. And she's like, oh, this is beautiful. Oh, ice skating. And I'm thinking, Schaefer, if we had term limits and we had a very determined, visionary, hardworking mayor, we would not have Harbor Place. And I think about all the money that that area has brought into this city.
All right, let's hear from Jim on that. What do you think of that idea? She's referring to the time of William Donald Schaefer, who was mayor from 1971 to 1986.
Right, and as I said a minute ago, I think I referred to Mayor Riley down in Charleston, who's been the mayor down there, I think, for 30-some years now. And I think that is an argument for vision. And as I said, I wasn't certain where I was on the term limit issue. The flip side of that is you have some people in office who aren't visionary, who don't move things forward, who stagnate in the office, and the people who suffer are the people in their district. And in some of these districts, they're not like my district where you have well-educated, organized communities, and people can't get them out.
Dave, I told you we get to Dave. Dave, just time for a quick comment on the plastic bags. Go right ahead.
Just real quick, great show, thanks.
Thank you.
Enough has probably been said about the bags, but there's one or two stores in Baltimore County that...
Real quick, please.
Yeah, the big distributors, they don't do bags, but they provide their excess boxes for people to carry their things away in. Is there any way to encourage that kind of behavior, which gets rid of the bags voluntarily?
Yeah, that's a good point. I know the kind of stores he's talking about, big box stores that have lots of boxes, but so don't supermarkets, right, have these boxes.
Right.
I mean, they don't have space to stack them up and ask
IKEA
people if they want
IKEA
them.
Doesn't give you a bag. If you go to IKEA, you don't get a bag.
You don't get a bag. You're supposed to bring an IKEA bag.
Right. Aldi, you have to pay for a bag. There are a number of places now where you don't get a bag.
Yeah. I just stock up on... the reusable bags, they don't cost much. You can pick them up some places.
Everybody's
giving them
away. We
ought to have a campaign in Baltimore to get someone to sponsor, put their name on the bag, and I don't know, give them away or charge people 50 cents for them or something.
Safeway and Giant gave them away in Montgomery County when they did the bag down there.
Jim Kraft, the city councilman from the 1st District of Baltimore, thank you for being here to explain these bills for us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Jim. And as I said, the mayor will be on the show tomorrow. We'll talk to her about some of these issues as well. Also, the big issue of state funding for the schools in Baltimore City. We'll be talking to the mayor about that tomorrow, the first budget from Governor Larry Hogan and its impact on Baltimore City school funding in particular. We'll take a break now. Bagby Pizza Company brought us lunch, so Jim, you get some of that. Bagby Pizza Company, located over there in Harbor East. Thank you very much for providing lunch for our guests. Please stay tuned for the news and then the second hour of midday.